0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock today. Now, I think everyone's listening to the headlines there and the news over the last day, and that shocking, shocking, shocking attack on an American tourist in Dublin city centre. And I think a lot of us, our minds went back to another truly shocking event, to another visitor to the city who had made their home here. Just have a listen to this.
A 16-year-old boy has been found guilty of the murder of a 49-year-old woman who was on her way home from work in Dublin city centre last year. The boy, who cannot be named because of his age, pleaded not guilty to the murder, but guilty to the manslaughter of Oran Setseg Serendorj on January the 29th, 2021.
Handa, good afternoon to you.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon.
And that was your friend that you lost on that day in January 2021.
Yeah, that's my friend. And thank you so much for having me today. So my friend had this amazing smile that was unbelievable. She was teaching young adults to have to learn to play volleyball every Saturday for free. And she was PE teacher back in Mongolia. She was a lovely person, and we miss her every day, and most especially her husband and kids. So, yeah, she was a beautiful person.
A very special person. And just to say, we're not using her name because in your culture, that is... Can you explain to us why, when somebody has passed, you don't use... repeat the name?
So we believe that, and our body is one form of spirit. So our body is stopped functioning, our spirit close and find another form of body. That's why we don't interfere and we don't annoy the spirit to find another form of life. So we are avoiding to use the deceased person's name frequently. So we are giving each other time to grieve and understand and give time for the spirit as well.
Tell me about her family then. How have they been since this terrible tragedy?
So her family situation is getting better, and thanks to those good Irish people in Ireland. So we as a community want to express our gratitude to all Irish people and non-Irish people who supported this tragic accident. So we went through difficult time as a community, but knowing people cared about us made us stronger. But it has been difficult to get support as a family, as a community needed. So we need more support for victims of this kind of attacks. So we are sending our solidarity to all victims who's been brutally attacked on the streets. It brings back a painful memory to our community.
Can I ask you, Handa, just to take us back there? Because I think this one stopped us all in our tracks. It was so shocking. Where were you when you heard about it?
Well, I was at home because it happened in the evening time. So I got the phone call from one of the community member, and he was informing that happened to her. So
did you know that call changed
everything. So
did you know at that time? Because I mean, this is the one of the many shocking elements of this is that it happened in daylight, and it was, you know, somebody just walking back from work, like something we all do all the time. Did you know how serious it was? Did you know she was gone?
No, we didn't.
What were you told?
We've been told that there was an incident happened and we cannot talk about things because it's involved with the minor. So the community was confused and afraid, and we were just waiting for more news. The news can enlighten us, but news was tragic. So, yeah, and we didn't know.
And you mentioned there the community. Is there many people in the Mongolian community in Ireland?
Yes, approximately 5,000 almost. So it's, the big community here.
And do you gather, I mean, are you concentrated in particular areas? Like, are you, would you have many people from your own community living in your area?
Yes, we are basically located in North Inner City. So, our community is quite located in city center and around the Spire and, you know, so,
And do you mind me asking, what brought you here, Handa?
Oh, I met my husband in Mongolia, so I came for love. And yeah, the Irishman brought me here.
Yes, love brought you here.
Yeah. Love brought me here.
Going back to your friend, and what happened, because she was, I know, a very close friend of yours, Handa.
Yes, she was. So what happened was, now I'm just seeing the chain of horrific acts in the inner city. So I think that it's my approach is the inner city and youths need more investment in their lives. Something has gone very bad, very wrong in child's life. If they are only 14 and 15 years old, they can able to do this brutal violence. It must be addressed like its source, you know. They need more funding for the childhood learning and community engagement projects. So furthermore, children need more space to learn and interact with each other in healthy ways. More sporting activities and facilities are required. So when kids are growing up, seeing violence at home, such as domestic abuse, drug abuse, and drinking, it shapes their behavior in the future. So if mom has been beaten by their partner at home, seeing and knowing that kids did not and could not help their mothers, it makes them angry and makes them aggressive. So they will be expressing their frustration to the innocent people, unfortunately, like my friend. So my approach is, if the child, any child, has been given another chance to escape from a hostile environment, they are not going to act that horrible acts to the other human being. It will reduce an horrendous act, at least, you know. So another thing is, also victims need accessible mental health services and a holistic approach to heal our wounds. I think government should consider this seriously, because those horrible acts will not go away anytime soon. Worry about victim's family. Worry about victim, for instance, who's going to pay that American tourist's hospital bill? Who's going to help to rebuild his life? Who's going to help to get better for mental health well-being? Who's responsible for those? So I think that when I'm going through this very horrific journey, all I needed is a systemical, sustainable health for our mental health, mental well-being. But they weren't the health weren't there. So I just think that, yes, we hear lots of horrible news every day now. This attack has been, feels like frequent. But what about these families, victims that been attacked?
I wanted to ask you about that. When you say the help wasn't there in terms of support for the family and for people like yourself who would have been very, you know, deeply affected by this, where did you turn for that?
So I called every single helplines. So all I got was, I will send you the link, or you should call this number. So one day I actually called a few different organizations, end up explaining and saying that, do you know there is a Mongolian woman got attacked and, you know, we need help. We need help for mental health. So it brought back my horrible memory, and I end up crying all day with no help. So then I quickly realized that anyone is not going to help me. So I instead went to the politicians. It shouldn't be like that, you know. I contacted with politicians saying that, you know what, I'm lost with this all phone numbers and service links. But I need, my community need, this family need urgent help. So can you help me? That's how I contacted with the politicians. Shouldn't be like this. So they did have, they did connect us the right services. But it was a very painful journey. Every time I speak with somebody, the question was, okay, tell me about the case. So it was very horrendous journey to trying to get little bit help. But we couldn't get it. Couldn't get the help.
So you had to keep telling your story over and over again, and you kept referring on to as we would say, Billy or Jack or whatever. You weren't actually getting the response you needed. And I'm amazed because, as I say, there was so much coverage of this. It was all over the newspapers. There was so much talk about, you know, the impact this would have on your community. And I'm just amazed to hear that there was no help being sent in there immediately to give you the support that you would need.
No, we didn't have any support. So there was a good intentions were there, but there weren't any sustainable support there. So end of the day, I was saying that I get depressed. I urgently need help for my mental health. Mm-hmm. And their other family is getting depressed. They need help. So I thought like, oh, I'm getting depressed and urgently need help could trigger some help for us, but didn't. All I was hearing was, okay, I'll give you another phone number. Oh, I can send you the link. So that was very hard, disheartening. So that's why every time I hear this kind of attack, my first question is, oh my God, who's going to help for this poor family and victims? Where are those help? Who's going to pay for the hospital bills? Who's going to help them to rebuild their broken lives? You know, it is horrendous.
You did get the help eventually, you say, with the help of the politicians you turned to.
And yes.
I'm conscious that, as you say, a lot of people from your community still live in that area where that attack happened. And I'm wondering how they feel. You know, is there fear there in terms of, you know, the possibility that somebody else might come under attack?
Yes, we all know, all aware that that happened to one of us. That actually triggers lots of fear for no matter where you are living, you know. So because we are very close community, so we know this story. So I think it's a general fear in the Dublin city centre that, you know, antisocial behaviour and other attacks is happening to other communities, you know. So there is, I think, the fear generally is there. So, yes, it impacted our community hugely. There's so many phone calls I received that, oh, we need help for our mental health. But I don't think everyone got the support, right support on time, you know. That's my concern.
I'm looking at a photograph of your friend. It's a beautiful photograph that was released after her death. You'll know the one with she's got the beautiful glamorous earrings and the smile and the dimples. Just tell me a little bit more, because, you know, we've heard of it, but we don't still, I feel, know more about your friend. What did she love? What was she like?
Yeah, she loved nature and she loved sporting activities and she loved to helping people. And if anyone was like recently landed in Ireland, they would contact with her to ask some advice and ask him some help to get the job. So she was an anchor of our community because she's been here quite a long time. And also, she managed to gather and sporting activities from Mongolian community, you know. She was integrating Mongolians into Irish society through the sporting activities. Also there are so many Mongolian kids and families, they have nothing for them to going on as sport-wise, you know, because of the GA is a little bit expensive. Every week there's matches everywhere around Ireland, so they don't have a car. Their kids cannot go continue their training. Mm-hmm. So what she saw was, okay, we have to do something for the young people, young Mongolians. So that's how she started organizing sporting activities every Saturday for free. She was teaching how to play basketball, how to play volleyball, and how to be a good human, decent human to this Irish in Ireland. So she loved Irish people. She loved Irish culture, and she embraced everything. And she was a very grateful person. So it's just hard to believe that.
So special, yeah. So such a loss, not just to your community, to you and her family, but it's a loss to all of us. The integration of the Mongolian, you know, newcomers here from your country, has it been, is it difficult? I'm just wondering, you know, because we do hear that there can be difficulties on the street and in terms of people's reaction to you. How have you found it?
Great. The personally, I have a fantastic experience integrating into Irish society. So the thing is, we are integrating through the before we were integrating through the sporting activities, it is continuing. So there is a little bit barriers because of the language, because of the culture, because of the different backgrounds. So there is I don't think our community's attitude changed to negative because what happened to one of our friends. We also, meantime, know that there is a small number of people has been reacting badly to the others. So it's like every society, you know. Every society has some bad behavior and good behavior. So we intend to take the good ones, then carry on with our life. That's our attitude here. So, yes, sometimes it's difficult. Overall, it's good. Many Mongolians got built a better life, gave a better education for their kids. We are grateful for the opportunity that the Irish people has been given us. So that's why the Mongolian person like me wants to contribute into society in a good way. Now I'm sharing my very personal story and saying that, look, I went through a very difficult time, losing my friend, very painful way. When I needed the help, there wasn't any help. I think government should really seriously consider about this system. So I think this horrible act is not going to go away anytime soon. So there will be more victims, more people will cry, more people will be wounded. So I think government will have a plan to, you know, to rebuild their life. We shouldn't be thrown into somewhere and saying, okay, sort your life out. It's not good. It's not enough. For our example is many ordinary Irish people in Ireland supported us. We relied on the kindness, strangers' kindness. All I'm saying that was good enough for us to get through the difficult time. But everyone shouldn't be relying on a stranger's kind meantime, and we should have a systemic support for the victims. That's all I'm saying. Like, please, victims get wounded every time they're trying to get some help. We should stop that vicious circle and saying that, okay, I'll give you a phone number. No, there has to be a holistic approach would be planned for the victim and the victim's family. I'm seriously asking that who is going to pay that American tourist hospital bills? Who is going to rebuild his health, to rebuild his life? So it's a huge shock, enormous life-changing thing. So he shouldn't be a victim and after victim, after victim, you know? So I think the system should consider about these options, like how we can support the victims in longer term and sustainable way.
I think, you make that point so well, Handa, and so you're so articulate coming from a community that, you know, has really been through it. And as you say, you got the kindness, you relied on the kindness of strangers, but that obviously is not good enough, particularly when it's visitors here, yeah. like this tourist. And we have a responsibility, definitely, as a country,
yes.
We should step up, mm-hmm. and the help should be there automatically. And also, like what you said about the fact that you have enough compassion in you to think about the young people who might, you know, who might find themselves in this situation, and to say that we need to deal with that as well, that it's you know, it's not, you can't just lock up the person,
no.
The young person who is responsible for this, because there'll be more where they come from.
Yeah, so I think we should invest more funding for early childhood learning. You know, we should we're trying to integrate them through the sporting activities and other facilities. So youngsters need this space and escape plan if they're having a difficult time at their homes and their streets. And the youngsters need to have an option to go through the different path and shape their future, you know. So if there is no space and no opportunities given to them, they will fall into the wrong crowd. So I think as a community, as a society, we should be doing more holistic approach to give it to the family who are really suffering from every single addictions and every single poverties, you know, they didn't give me any opportunity to thrive and be a good citizen in this world. I think we should think about it, its source.
Yeah.
That's my take.
Handa, it has been an absolute privilege talking to you today. I thank you so much. As you say, you opened up about your own private story, about your friend and about your community. And I think you've opened a lot of our eyes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having me. And I hope people who've been attacked in the street, they will recover and they will heal their wound, and their broken spirit will be healed very soon. So we are sending our solidarity. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Handa.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
What an extraordinary woman Handa is, and what an incredible ambassador for her community, and what an extraordinary loss her friend, the loss of her friend. Let me go now to Marie. Marie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm good.
That's good.
I'm sure you were listening to Handa there.
I was indeed, yeah, horrendous. I remember the case. I remember when it happened and thinking, my God almighty, is there any safety in this town at all? What happened to me happened, you know, it was 30 years ago, so I'm going back a little bit, I'm afraid. But I was attacked, and I was on my way up to visit a friend of mine who was in St. James's Hospital. And I got off the bus in James Street, and I walked up the main thoroughfare on the roadway. I wouldn't even walk in where the path was, because there were bushes and that were too concealing. And I thought if anybody came towards me, they could knock me flying and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Little did I know what was facing me. I was walking up towards Hospital 5, and this car was coming towards me. All I remember was a large car, and it was a dark colour. But it was coming at a crawling pace. And I thought it was a bit suspicious, but I just kept walking. And it was a nasty night. I had an umbrella with me and I had it up. And the next thing I knew was I got a wallop on the back of the head, knocked to the ground, and they tried to tug on the bag. Of course, I was holding on to my bag. They weren't getting it for love nor money, but unfortunately, the little brats, they did. Now, these weren't kids. These were adults. But they got the bag. And, of course, I was screaming for help and whatever. So the next thing, from the left, two men came flying out. I didn't realise what it was. It was the security office. And, of course, they jumped into the car. down they went and out the James Street gate the way I had come in. So they brought me into the office and whatever, and they asked me questions and all the rest of it. And they said the reason they had the lights off, they were watching the James Street gate. They had thought there was something going to happen that way, but it was the other way they should have been watching. But anyway, that was neither here nor there. So I was caught, and that was the end to it. But like, they looked after me, and they sent for the police, and the police came along. They were lovely to me. Couldn't have been nicer. They did everything they could, and they wanted to bring me to A&E, you know, the usual, like, over and get checked out. I was saying, just leave me. I just want to get the hell out of here. Now, I was shaking. I was absolutely rattled. The whole thing really rattled me. So I continued on up to visit my friend, and apparently word had filtered through. He'd been in there quite a bit, and he was well known, so the nurses all knew. And they heard Marie was coming in, and something was after happening. They were actually waiting for me when I arrived. Oh, the nurses made tea for me and made a big fuss for me and all the rest of it. But I came home then that night. My bag was taken, and my bloody name and address, unfortunately, was in it. So we had to get the locks on the door changed. I needn't tell you, that wasn't a bit funny. And also my bank book was in my bag, and I had cash in my bag, and the Lord knows it was quite a big bag. There was quite a bit of stuff in it, but my wages was only after being paid in, and my wages slip was in my bag. So it was a complete flipping nightmare. So I had to come home, and I rang the bank and told them to cancel everything. And I went down first thing the next morning and did the same thing. I said, look, oh yeah, we have a note of you ringing last night. And I said, well, I just want to confirm that everything has been stopped. So that was fine. So I literally was in walking distance of my job, and I was fine going up in the morning time, but coming back at night time, walking down the road. Now, on the road I lived on all my life, if I heard footsteps behind me, Katie, I would literally freeze on the spot, and I'd say, oh, merciful God, is this going to happen to me again?
Now, this goes on. I think that is... Well, yeah, that's the thing about this, because you were in one way lucky, I suppose you could say. You weren't badly injured. You were able to sort out with some phone calls your house keys and all of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not the issue at all, really, is it? It's actually what it does to your head and to your sense of safety.
It stays with you, Katie, because, I mean, that was 30, 15 years ago. And occasionally, now I'm not going to blow this out of all proportion, occasionally, if I hear footsteps behind me and it's dark and I'm on my own, I will go, oh God, is this going to happen again? Now, I mean, half the time I might just walk along and I'd be fine, but there's sometimes it just hits me. Oh my God, what happened years ago? Am I going to be hit in the back of the head again? Like, it does stay with you and it does frighten you. That's why I was listening to that lad that was on with Philip Belcher Hayes this morning. Mm-hmm. Saying about people passing, you know, coming up behind him, passing him, but going on his outside to get out on the roadway to pass him by. That scares him, that he thinks, oh my God, are they going to do it again? I can quite understand where that lad is coming from. Oh my God, if he was badly hurt, God love him. I wasn't. I was scratched and rattled and whatever, but I wasn't badly physically hurt, that poor devil was. But at the same time, like, I can see where he's coming from. He's living through it all again every time he walks along the street. And it's absolutely horrible. That's the worst part. Like, I thought, it's all over and done with, I'd be fine. But no, absolutely not. And I was actually, I never carried a bag with me after that until August. That happened in December 92, the first Sunday, December 92. And in August, I was going over. A friend of mine, his mum had passed, and I was invited over to the house. Again, I had to travel on public transport. I don't drive. And I had gotten off the bus, and I was walking down, I think it was Clough Road, and I heard footsteps behind me. The first time I carried a bag, and I went, oh, here we go again. So I walked much faster, and of course, as I got faster, the footsteps got faster. So I said, to hell with this, I'm going to face them down. And I stopped, and I swung round. There was nobody there. It was the echo of my own footsteps.
Yeah, and but that's it.
That's the horror of it. Yeah. That's the horror of it, Katie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people don't think the lasting effects it's going to have, but it can do. I mean, everybody mightn't be affected like that. Unfortunately, I was. And as I say, an odd time now, yes, but most of the time I'm fine. But I mean, it was 30 years ago. I should be over it by now.
But it does still live with you. And I do think the other side of this, Marie, is that because you see the headlines of what happened to that poor man in Dublin City Centre, about what happened to Handa's friend, all of this just it you know, you absorb all this and it plays out, it plays on your mind,
Of course, because I was like, I mean, every time I see or hear anything like this, well, thanks be to God I wasn't that bad. I wasn't hurt in that way. I mean, that poor American tourist, God love him, in Flame and Beaumont Hospital, he obviously has bad head injuries. Mm-hmm. I mean, what did that man do on anybody? Absolutely flipping nothing. Came to the country to visit, whatever. And because he was out on his own again, he was attacked by a gang of couriers. Like, why can't you walk the streets?
Like, I know there's a lot of talk now about the north inner city in particular, you know, around exactly where that man, that tourist was attacked.
Would you
walk around that, you know, would you have concerns? I mean, put aside your very personal thing, but I mean, would you have in the past been comfortable walking around that part of the city? Or do you notice any changes there over the years, Marie?
Well, I wouldn't be overly familiar with that side of the city. Like, occasionally I'd be over that way. I'd always be cautious. But, like, I wouldn't be absolutely terrified. I'd say, oh, God, I'm terrified going down there. I'd just walk down and I'd be cautious and careful that I wouldn't let a bag be seen or something like that, like, in case some little courier come out and grab it. But, like, the fact of the matter now is, Katie, they're carrying flipping weapons. And that's what you're scared of. You know, I mean, nowadays, they said, oh, we carry that for our own protection. They do, and they're flaming. I carry it for their own protection. They're carrying them to use them. I mean, they never carried weapons years ago for their own protection. So why are they carrying them now? They're not carrying them for their own protection. They're carrying them to use them. And then if they get the opportunity, they see somebody on their own, oh, she has a bag, or he probably has a wallet with money in it, whatever, will jump them and do whatever and scare the living daylights out of them, slash them in some way to make sure that we get what we want. I don't care what anybody says, and the law is an absolute ass, because the guys that attacked me were never caught, I will admit. But even when they are, they get a slap on the wrist, as was said on Philip's programme this morning. That's all they get, and they walk out and they're sneering at you saying, hey, shook you, we got you, and now we're out. We don't care. We can go out now and do it again. It's absolutely criminal. I don't know what the flaming government are doing. They could change the law if they wanted. If it was a relative of theirs, by God, you'd soon see how quick the law would be changed. It would be changed overnight and no questions asked. And there wouldn't be a damn thing you could do about it. But when it's an ordinary Joe Soap like you or I, and we're just an ordinary taxpayer, an ordinary citizen, let it happen. We pretend that we're giving them punishment. It's not. They'd never get punished properly. Never. And even this act of these, oh, look, we can't name them because they're underage, and then they get a lenient sentence because they're underage. Oh, give them a chance. Give them a chance, my eye. They'll go out and do it again.
Right.
9 out of 10 of them, they do.
Okay, you're taking a different tack than Handa's approach there. But can I ask you to hang on there, Marie, because we're getting a lot in on this, and I need to take a break.
Oh, sure, you are.
We'll come back to this after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I want to bring in Keith now. Keith, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Keith, you, am I right, you're living in Spain now?
That's correct, yeah. I live in Valencia in Spain.
But you used to live in Dublin.
Well, I'm one of the diaspora. I left in the mid-80s and I returned to Ireland around 2000 and moved to Dublin. So I was living in Rathfarnham for a while. So I was there for a bit, yes.
But as you say now, you're the diaspora now, and you wanted to talk to me about your daughter's experience of returning to Dublin. Yeah,
it was just to share an experience. So my children are on holidays, basically, with their grandparents in Ireland. We try and send them home each year. My children were born in Spain, but they're very much Irish. So we thought this year they're old enough now to kind of understand things. They're 14 and 17 years old. So we organized a trip, actually it was yesterday, to Dublin for them, you know, for the first time to have a look at the capital, learn about the history, see the landmarks, etc. Mm-hmm. And basically, yesterday evening, you know, during a video conference to ask them how they got on, you know, what was their experience. I think in a 1 hour conversation, the first 5 minutes were given over to how much they liked, you know, visiting the GPO and the Spike. They went to visit Trinity and do a bit of shopping. But the remaining 50 minutes was just a list of how shocked they were by what they saw.
Shocked.
Well, basically shocked. They were. I don't want to put too strong a word. I mean, we could say disappointed, but I think they were genuinely shocked because the list was quite long. they talked about, they were surprised how dirty it was. Now, this is the city centre they're talking about primarily. Mm-hmm. Primarily. They just noticed how seemingly run down everything was and that all the shops were just for the tourists, for, you know, cheap souvenirs for the tourists. They tried going to a cafe or a restaurant. They couldn't get over how expensive it was. When they went in, they were just shocked that the service was so poor and the facilities were so poor. And the more concerning for me was their revelation that they told me basically they could count the pickpockets and the drug addicts. They could, you know, it was so obvious to them who they were looking at. In the crowds. And I found that a little bit shocking, to be honest, especially for, you know, young teenagers to be able to pick up on that. So I can't say I'm surprised, but I'm disappointed.
And did they say they felt nervous by what they saw? Did they worry for their safety?
Uncomfortable. No, I think they felt uncomfortable. I don't think they went as far, because they were with their mother. Mm-hmm. They were in the main areas, but they were uncomfortable. Where we live in Spain, Valencia, we just don't have that experience now. I'm sure maybe some people have, but I can walk in the city centre in Valencia at 1 o'clock at night or even 2 o'clock in the morning with my children and never feel any sense of discomfort. It's just not the same. I feel very, very safe here. Dublin, no. I would never allow my kids to go to the city late evening or anything like that. Not in Dublin.
And that obviously that they saw it, people with drug addictions. And I mean, people talk about seeing if you look down the alleyways and side streets, seeing people shooting up or taking drugs or dealing drugs. Would you have any experience of that, or would your children have any experience of that?
Definitely. Yeah, I would, but I haven't lived there for 20 years. But certainly I remember walking around, going out of a Saturday evening in Dublin, not a place I would want to go again in a hurry. And I've lived in quite a few cities around Europe over the last 30 years. Dublin is the only city I ever feel unsafe on a Saturday evening.
Really? You're saying going back, because people are saying this is a post-COVID thing, you know, people are putting a lot of...
No, you're saying...
Even back in the 20 years ago, that you would have had the same sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, I used to, when I was very young in the 70s, I used to go to Dublin every year with my father to the boat show. And we'd be brought into the city centre. And there was a feeling like, you know, it was Dublin. You know, it was tough times. Mm-hmm. But there was a sensation that there was a community. And, you know, Dublin city centre was an interesting place full of characters. But if I go back 20 years to, say, the mid-90s and the 20s or 2000s, it started to change. And you started to notice it was just becoming, if you like, a tourist mecca. And there was less of that feeling of, you know, community. Mm-hmm. And now, really, the centre has just been given over entirely to tourism. And the results are becoming evident. It's just, you know, the experience is just there to get as much money out of the tourists. There's little investment in the infrastructure. It's not being cleaned up. And you're seeing the consequences. It's just been allowed to, you know, to be... The tourist campaigns look fantastic, but it's not the reality, you know, not when you go there. If you visit for half a day and go to the city centre, perhaps you're okay, but you need only take one step in the wrong direction and you start seeing something completely different. So, no, I definitely, in the last 20 years or so, you've seen a steady progression down for the city centre, I'm primarily talking about.
So I take it you won't be organising any trips to Dublin for your daughters anytime soon again?
Well, I asked them if they'd go back and they said no. You know, which is not really the answer I would want. I mean, you know, they visited other cities and I've never had that reaction. But they said no. My eldest even at one time thought about maybe when she's older to go to university. Dublin was an option. I think she's firmly written that off her list. Wow. From her experience, even just from one day. I mean, that profound an effect.
Wow.
So that was basically it. It's disappointing, really. I'm disappointed for my kids.
That is disappointing, Keith. Thank you for that. Thanks for getting in touch with that.
Well, thank you for having me and thank you for letting me share the story. And I wish Dublin all the best. I hope somebody will start doing something about this. Dublin is a great city. It's a beautiful city, but somebody needs to start investing some money and turning the city centre around. It should be one of the best capitals in Europe, not the poor cousin.
Thank you, Keith. If you want to stay there, if you need to go, I need to bring in Dennis now. Thanks to Keith there for that insight, not one that maybe a lot of people will be happy to hear, that his daughters really have no interest in coming back to Dublin after what they saw yesterday. Dennis, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie. Katie, that gentleman there that you've just spoken, he's absolutely correct. I lived in London for quite some time and I returned back in 1999 and I rang Joe Duffy on Liveline to explain explain how horrified I was with what I saw in the capital city that I'm from. We're now in 2023 and we're still having this conversation. Now that tells me that the people who have the power to change this or sort this problem out have failed miserably.
What is the problem in your view, Dennis? What did you see when you came back that
I was just basically walking amongst zombies. There's every second person was off their face. I mean, I'll give you an example, Katie.
Okay, I'm just going to ask you to do one thing for me, Dennis. Just, you know, if we're talking about people with drug addictions, I think we should be maybe use a bit more respectful language because we are talking about people who have very serious health problems, let's face it. I hear what you're saying, but I'm just saying, let's just keep a bit of respect. We're talking about people.
How come the question I want to ask is the following. How come 20-odd years later we're having this conversation? How come when I tune into Leaders' Questions in the Dáil every week, Wednesday and Thursday, none of the politicians are banging the drum about what's going on? They're all talking about it's all parish pump politics while Rome is burning outside them. And nobody seems to do anything about it. Furthermore, politicians getting on the phone and talking about opening a police station in O'Connell Street.
Oh yeah,
There was a big hoo-ha about it, but can you square this circle for me, right? How come there's a police station open in O'Connell Street and we have drug addicts shooting up at the Ambassador? How come I can Store Street? How come there's a lane opposite Store Street where they congregate and shoot up every day? Like, what's going on here? You know, the reason what's happening here is quite simply, they have lost the streets. They lost the streets back in 1999, and they still have lost the streets. And no one seems to be bothered or concerned or making it a priority. When the RTE scandal broke, every politician in the land turned up to listen to the listen to the RTE personnel being cross-examined. I would like to see the politicians in front of me and answer my questions. Why I feel that I cannot go into Dublin or walk around Dublin and feel safe in 2023.
Well,
that's the question I want to ask.
Well, Dennis, we did ask some questions of on Garda Síochán as well in relation to policing of the inner city. And just I have a few. Now, they did say to us that they don't comment on the day-to-day deployment of resources, and they referred us to press releases that they issued at the time that new Garda station was opened on O'Connell Street. But just here's what we know about that. Their website tells us that there are 281 Gardaí assigned to Store Street, which is obviously that big station, very close to where that very violent incident happened the other day. 25 of those are assigned to immigration at the docks, we're told. We're told that this Gardaí station in O'Connell Street, this new Gardaí station, it is a standalone station within the C district, the Store Street C district, and we're told staffed with one sergeant and four Gardaí.
Okay.
So that's how many people they've assigned. And then there is this Operation Citizen. I don't know if you've heard about this, Dennis.
No.
This is the focus of Operation Citizen in the north inner city is O'Connell Street, Henry Street, the boardwalk and surrounding laneways and streets. And it's about high visibility engagement with businesses and residents in the local community. And we're told there are four sergeants and 40 Gardaí assigned to Operation Citizen. Now, that seems to be quite a lot, actually. Four sergeants,
Katie,
and 40 Gardaí.
Katie, listen.
Have you seen any of them?
I'm listening to all this waffle, right? This is all waffle as far as I'm concerned, right? I had two guests over from London there a couple of weeks ago. And we had we finished our breakfast and we were walking to to get the Lewis on Abbey Street. And we were walking down one of the laneways. And there was four of them shooting up on the laneways. And I've got to walk by this with my guests. And they're looking at me and I'm looking at them and they're saying, no thanks, we won't be back.
And were they, though? Do they not see that in London? Surely there's addiction issues and...
Of course there is, but would you see it on Bond Street or Oxford Street or Piccadilly? The answer, I have personally been in all those streets. I have never seen it, never witnessed it. Come back to Dublin and it's everywhere. You stand outside Bosaurus when they throw you out at night time and you see what's going on. You see what's going on. I'm in there all the time. I see this. I'm not making this up.
Dennis, I don't think anyone is under any illusion at this stage of what they see.
Katie,
and let me say, Dennis, let me just say this because we don't want to totally blacken Dublin and say it's a uniquely a place with unique problems, because we know that there's issues in other urban areas around the country and in cities in particular. And I know the other day, Thursday night, very violent, very, very violent attack in Galway. Somebody badly injured in that had to be sent to Beaumont Hospital yet again. So, you know, we know this isn't something that is unique to Dublin or to Dublin city centre.
Katie, zero tolerance. The law has to be changed. These people have to be held accountable. They cannot be going in and out of court getting slaps on wrists, right? This has to be dealt with. Giuliano done it in New York, right? If the political will is there, it will get resolved. The political will is not there. The politicians are not getting to grips with this problem. It will go on. And no matter what the minister says or Drew Harris says, these are all plasters, sticking plasters to a problem that's got out of hand, that's not been dealt with. End of story.
Okay, Dennis, I have more people coming in on this. Many thanks for that. We'll take another break.
No problem.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're talking about violent attacks in Dublin city centre. And indeed, as I say, it's not the only place where we've read about attacks happening in recent days. I want to bring in Catherine now. Catherine, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie.
Yeah, Catherine, you're not based in Dublin, are you? Am I right there?
No, I live in Cork.
But you want to talk about Dublin?
Yes, because I visited Dublin earlier this year for a few days with another person. I really like Dublin, but while we were there, we decided to take a stroll on O'Connell Street at about 8 o'clock at night.
Okay.
And it was dark, but we weren't on the street very long before we felt quite afraid and very, very nervous about being there. And we decided to head back over the bridge to where we were staying.
And why did you feel nervous, Catherine?
Well, there were lots of people around, but as far as we could see, most of the people who were around were very odd people indeed. I suspect that some of them may have been drug users. There were some people behaving quite aggressively, that we didn't experience that, as in nothing happened to us, but it made us feel very, very nervous and afraid of being on that street, even though it was only about 8 p.m. in the evening.
And are you saying it was like noticeably different to, say, being on Patrick Street at 8 p.m., if I can use a Cork reference?
Oh, yes, there is no question, because I have lived in Cork a long time and there is absolutely no comparison. So that is not to say that things don't happen in Cork. Certainly they do. There have been incidents. Mm-hmm. And I guess there are, as you said, Katie, in other cities as well, of course. But I think that the atmosphere on O'Connell Street at that time, on that occasion, and I don't think it's the first time I've felt that way, was just really unpleasant. And it made you feel like you weren't safe.
Yeah, that was my next question, actually. Did you feel like just you personally that something could happen, and that was the sense you had of what was?
Yes, there were just people milling around who seemed to be strange. I couldn't say whether they were drug users. I suspect some of them were. And there were also quite a lot of homeless people around. At the time, homeless services were there feeding people.
There at O'Connor Bridge, at the GPO, you mean, yeah?
Opposite the GPO, on the other side of the street, around Cleary.
Yeah.
And we just felt much safer when we went back across the bridge to the other side. We felt a good deal safer.
On the south side?
Yes.
And did you I just wanted to ask you that, because is that divide more pronounced than previously, perhaps? That does the river divide the city in more ways than geographically?
Yeah, well, I don't live in Dublin, so I'm not sure I can really comment on that too much. Other people who live in Dublin might be able to talk about that a bit more. But
are you saying once you crossed over O'Connell Bridge to the south side, to Westmoreland Street, that sense of fear or uncomfortableness or whatever, however you want to describe it, that wasn't there at that side of the river, you're saying?
Not really, no. And then is when you went further from there again towards Grafton Street and those areas, definitely that feeling, for us at least, wasn't there. Now, there are places in and around Temple Bar and along the quays that I wouldn't be keen on being in the nighttime or evening either. Mm-hmm. But and I know they're on the south side, but certainly there was a distinct feeling on O'Connell Street of, this is like a place where we shouldn't be.
Right. And would it turn you off coming to Dublin again?
Oh, yes, yes. In fact, we were saying, and we're obviously Irish people. As I said, I like Dublin. There are many things in Dublin that would attract me, but I would feel that I no longer want to visit Dublin, you know, just to visit, unless it's for work or something like that. I just won't do it.
God, and that's exactly what Keith was saying about his girls as well, that they just...
No, I have no interest whatsoever. No.
It's a very worrying development, I think, if you have a business in Dublin city centre, you're relying on your reputation that people want to come back. And Dublin had such a brilliant reputation as a city, a vibrant city that people wanted to visit and see. And it was, you know, it was a cool place to be, actually, you know, across European cities.
May I also add, I mean, I've travelled a lot also, like Keith. I've been all around the world and I've never experienced this kind of atmosphere in another city. I know maybe there is in some places or some occasions, but the atmosphere around that area is incredibly off-putting. And the other aspect of it that I'd like to point out is that some of those streets around O'Connell Street and including O'Connell Street are extremely poorly kept. There's dereliction, there's dirt. We really should be ashamed of our the primary street in our capital city.
Well, do you know what, that's the point, isn't it? That we're not talking about some rundown, part of the city that's been left to go to wreck and ruin. This is the main thoroughfare, the main promise. It should be our Champs-Élysées.
Yes, and it could be. It could be very, because it has a lot of similarities. But unfortunately, it's not a welcoming place in any respect, in my opinion.
Okay. Catherine, thank you for that. Thank you for that perspective from a Cork woman visiting the city. And I got another Cork man, I think. Now, John O'Donovan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. So Catherine was saying that she would just she would never have that sense in Cork that she felt walking down O'Connell Street at 8 o'clock recently. There.
Well, I'm afraid Cork is getting there as well now, that people feel very unsafe now, Katie. I would never walk home again. Now, I consider myself very streetwise. But the thing is, if I missed the last bus, if I was meeting friends in town that I didn't see for a while, for a drink or whatever, I would get a taxi home. There was a time I wouldn't dream of doing that because I'm very fit. But now I would not take the chance walking home because there are no police on the streets. It's the same song has been sung right around the country, from Galway to Tipperary to Cork to Waterford to Dublin. No guards in the street. The jackets are not seen on the street. The response time is not there. I've rang in stuff there over the years, stuff I've seen on the streets there, and I wait to see will the guards come. And 9 times out of 10, the guards don't come. And the perception out there now is that town is not safe. I know many, many, many people now, especially elderly people, Katie, that won't go into town anymore during the day. They certainly won't go in at night time. And you have to have two economies.
Hang on a second now, John. During the day, people won't go into Cork City Centre during the day?
No, they won't, because there's too many aggressive beggars around there. There's too many homeless people. There's too much street drinking going on. Right in Patrick Street and in the Grand Parade section, right? In particular, they're there day after day after day. And people just, they're frightened about coming in. And then you have the people with very good pensions and good disposable income. And one thing for any city to survive, Katie, Dublin or Cork, you need two economies. You need the daytime economy and you need the nighttime economy. And unfortunately, the nighttime economy is losing out because people know, as I said, I know, that have very, very good pensions and would like to eat out in the great restaurants that we have here in Cork are frightened about coming into town for the simple reason they feel that there's no protection there on the streets.
You see, and I kind of got the sense that Cork was kind of coming back to life. There was those brilliant pictures of all that outdoor eating during, in the wake of the COVID. I got that sense that Cork was really coming to life as a city to socialise and eat in and.
Yeah, when you have the local Gardaí themselves, they come in, the people below there, and Angus is speaking out saying that they can't police the city properly. I will listen to those guys because they know what they're talking about. When I have a guard, I've been involved in many campaigns over the years, the water campaign, property campaign, stuff like that, and I've encountered a lot of guards who just turn up at these protests and there's not ever any hassle there, right? But I was approached by one guard in particular, and he said, would you ever consider, he said, listen to this now, Katie, this is a guard asking a member of the civilian population, would you ever mount a protest, he said, for us and our conditions and the lack of backup on the streets? Just imagine that, a practising guard asking a citizen to know would we mount a protest for them, because as you know, Katie, they can't go on strike.
Well, yeah. Well, they had the blue flu, of course. We did.
Yeah.
But obviously they are frontline.
Well, I'm afraid the book stops, which is one of the other callers brought up. We have a person called the Minister of Justice. It doesn't matter if she's a man or a woman, right? And at that given time. But I'm sorry, she needs to resign. And Leo Varadkar needs to sack her. Or else he needs to go himself, because I'll tell you what has happened. Not alone has the Minister of Justice and the government lost the confidence of the people, they've lost the confidence of the Gardaí. It's gone. You talk to Gardaí off the record and they will tell you. There's guards. No, not before you joined the guards, Katie, like people would stay until retirement. It was a good job, well paid job. Obviously you wouldn't have to hassle with drugs and stuff whatever like, but no, not alone are people leaving that have been injured or taking early retirement. They're leaving for the simple reason they haven't got the backup and they're absolutely frightened now going out on duty because the backup won't be there. And people have no problem now, which had never happened before in the 70s when I was a younger man going out, of taking on the guards. They will fight with the guards now. They will beat up the guards. They will ram them with cars. They will try and stab them. They will headbutt them. They will kick them. They have no problem doing that. So, I mean, and again, you see, this is where whoever is the Minister for Justice needs to get in the Garda Commissioner, needs to get in all the judges as well need to be brought in on this because the court is not working out either. For serious crime, you have to be going away for a long time. And in tandem with that, again, which is brought upon the earlier callers, that you have to go into disadvantaged areas. You have to have more social workers going in there. You have to have more community liaison officers with the Gardaí going in there. How does a guy, I've seen it many times in Oreco on the local paper here, Katie, that a guy inside in court at 18 years of age and he has 57 convictions there. I mean, how the hell did that happen? And then they wonder when he's standing in front of a judge where this guy came from.
Yeah, no, I mean, as you say, it's not today or yesterday that became an issue. But okay, John, I'm going to let you go because I need another break, and I want to talk after this to a tourist who was himself robbed on Parnell Street 2 weeks ago.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And you're welcome back. Paula, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Paula. Apologies, Paula. I was expecting a man. You are not, in fact, a man.
No, I'm not as far as I know. Okay. Not recently, no.
Okay.
I am an American.
You're an American. You're a visitor to our shores. You're on holiday, yeah?
I was, yeah, with my partner. Yes, we were on holiday in Ireland, and I will also preface this by saying we love Ireland, and in general, it was a wonderful time in Ireland. The people are lovely. It was tremendous. Every time we go, we think this is just a lovely, beautiful country. So I really want to say that because it was, in general, just a terrific trip.
Okay.
However, unfortunately, there is a big caveat to that, which was I was in fact pickpocketed in Dublin. So as an American tourist, I was walking with my friend and. I'm a seasoned traveler. I sort of think to myself I was lulled into a false sense of complacency because people were so friendly. Mm-hmm. And so I was not on my highest alert as I often am in cities. So I was carrying an umbrella in my backpack and I actually felt myself get bumped and I thought I had hit somebody behind me, whacked them inadvertently with my backpack umbrella. So I had turned around and I actually apologized to the people who are almost certainly my pickpockets, saying, I'm so sorry, I hit you with my umbrella. And my friend and I we both saw them. They looked like 20-something girls dressed like ordinary tourists with their phones out, appearing not to be paying attention. But almost the same second, I thought to myself, I think I've been pickpocketed. And I checked my backpack and I had, in fact, been pickpocketed. So that was, a moment of panic, cognitive dissonance. What do we do? Do we run after these girls?
And where were they?
My friend actually had the same thought.
Where were they at this point? Where were the girls when you realized what had happened?
They just continued walking down the street. So, in retrospect, that should have been it was in fact a clue because we were trying to cross the street. And so I thought, it's normal for people to crowd you at street crossings when you're waiting for the lights to change or you're waiting for, an opportunity. So that's part of it. But they were walking down the street instead of actually trying to cross the street. So, again, it was just a moment of extreme cognitive dissonance. They weren't running. They were just strolling. But that's somehow we both thought, oh, my gosh, pickpockets. And that's when I checked, and yes, I've been pickpocketed.
And what was taken, Paula?
My a wallet and an iPhone. So the first thing we did was go to the Garda, the nearest Garda station, and report it missing, having been pickpocketed. So they took down a few details, and that was it. I honestly didn't expect the Garda to do anything for a nonviolent crime of this kind. So my biggest concern was simply to report it and then try to immediately set about canceling my credit cards and other documents to make sure that I had no further fallout occurred. Mm-hmm. So I was back in the apartment with my friend when she told me about the Find My Phone feature on iPhone, and she told me to brick it, which is to stop it from being used. And I said I did not know about this feature. So she set it up, found my phone, and indeed it was sitting very close to the apartment, which is very close to where I actually got pickpocketed. Mm-hmm. So we were watching it for a little bit on the screen, not moving, and she said, your phone hasn't moved for 15 minutes, and she's like, I'm going to go find it. And I was like, what? And so she's like, she just took off. she basically just took off and said, I'm going to find your phone. Well, I was on the phone with the credit card companies and so on and so forth. And in the meantime, this is actually where I got upset with the Garda. In the meantime, another friend had come over to try to talk me down and basically calm me down and say, you know, this is what's happening, da-da-da-da-da. And my friend came over, we're watching my phone on the screen, not moving, but almost within seconds of my friend going to try to find the phone started moving. And I became very concerned that my friend, having seen these two girls, might have spotted them again, sort of being in place in the same spot in the street, and that there was going to be some sort of altercation or something like that. I was concerned for her safety. Mm-hmm. So my other friend called the Garda and more or less conveyed this situation to them. And the Garda were very dismissive. And they effectively said, well, this feature is not very accurate. It doesn't really reflect where your phone is. It's not really very relevant, so on and so forth. And meanwhile, my other friend was saying, well, can you just send somebody around just to make sure, just pop on over it, so to speak. And they were just like, oh, no, it's fine. So that's when I got a little bit upset, because I thought, well, if she is actually going down there and she's a very direct person, she very well may have gotten into a face-to-face shouting match or whatever. And I was watching the phone starting to move, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, something terrible has happened to her, or the thieves are continuing to walk around now. They're running away from her or something like that. I had no real idea. In the end, it was fine, because she came back and she actually had found both my phone and my wallet tossed into a flower pot.
Oh, brilliant.
Where they were exactly as she said. Yeah, well, she herself was shocked that she found the wallet, but they were together in a flower pot.
Wow. Okay.
Exactly where the Apple Find My Phone had said.
A happy ending, at least for that, Paula. And I'm glad you enjoyed your trip here. Besides that, I'm going to let you go. I just have a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to get to Valerie. Valerie, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie.
How are you, Valerie? I've only got a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I suppose I concur with everything that most people have said on the show today. I'm Irish and had friends over from America yesterday. First time in the city, maybe in 6 months. I was appalled, blown away. I couldn't believe things had gone as bad as it did. The man with the kids from Spain, he was 100% on the ball. I walked the streets yesterday in Dublin and I felt nervous. First time ever in my life. Having lived in New York, go to London, have been in most European capital cities, never felt the fear that I felt yesterday. So there's definitely some problem somewhere that needs to be addressed. And I agree with the other guy who said, you know, Giuliani cleaned up New York. We need somebody definitely to come in and clean up Dublin.
Okay.
It's such a pity to invite people here and be afraid for them while they're here.
Okay, Giuliani, of course, went on to do a lot of other things that we mightn't be so proud of since then. But of course, he was famously
totally,
the zero tolerance,
that
zero tolerance policy that did a big
needed.
Yeah. So are you honestly saying, honestly, Valerie? Valerie, are you honestly saying you felt safer walking the streets of New York than you did walking the streets of Dublin yesterday?
honestly, Katie, I had a conversation with my husband. We're literally on a journey today as well. And I said to him, I remember walking in Manhattan and feeling fine on my own, but I didn't feel okay yesterday. I have an 18-year-old daughter. I would not want her to go to Dublin on her own. I have a background in addiction, so I would be well aware of it, and couldn't believe how evident it all was on the streets yesterday. It was probably my first time to actually see it as evident as it was yesterday. So it is a real problem. It's a problem in most of this country, but not as evident as it is on the streets in Dublin.
Okay. Okay, Valerie, I'm going to have to go. I'm out of time. Many, many thanks for that. And thanks to all our callers today, and in particular to Handa, who opened our show for us today. Very impressive person. And that's it. Our series producer is Annette Egan. Today's programme was produced by Regina Henley. On sound, we had Mark McGrath, and our BCO today was Adriana Verona. That's it for the weekend. Stand by for Ray, and we'll see you on Monday.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.